Hi, I'm Peter Sagal. Welcome to the podcast edition of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. Enjoy.
From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you so much, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. We have got a great show for you this week. But first, I wanted to share a true story with you. George Bush's favorite painting, which he has hung in the Oval Office, is called A Charge to Keep. It's a lovely oil painting of a cowboy who, mind you, looks a little bit like George Bush, according to the president himself, and he's riding over a ridge in an obvious hurry. Mr. Bush tells people that the figure in the painting is a Methodist evangelist who in history brought the good word to people out there in the West. Well, Jacob Weisberg, author of a new book about President Bush, researched the history of that painting and found out that that story is completely untrue. The horseman in the painting is actually a horse thief running from a lynch mob. True story. Further proof that the real news will beat us at our own game. Back to you. Call us up. Play our games. The number, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi. Hi. This is Joan Koenig in Oak Park, Illinois.
Yeah, Oak Park, a town I know well, a beautiful suburb outside Chicago. Tell you what, Joan, let us get right to it. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to comedian Paul Prevenza.
Hello, Joan.
Hello.
Also say hello to one of the women behind the Washington Post's reliable source column is Roxanne Roberts.
Hey, Joe.
Hello.
Also say hello to a writer for the Boston Globe magazine and the author of Moving the Chains, Tom Brady and the Pursuit of Everything, Mr. Charlie Pierce.
Hello.
Hi, Joan.
Joan, welcome to the show. You're going to start us off this week with Who's Carl This Time? Carl Castle is going to read you three quotes from this week's news. If you correctly identify or explain two of them, you'll win our prize, Carl Castle's voice on your home answering machine.
All right.
Ready to play?
Yes.
Some people sounded surprised by that, and I'm like, you have heard this show, right? Or were you not able to get tickets for Wicked? It ended up here instead.
Well, it is cold outside.
It is cold. So. Maybe they just ducked into the nearest warm doorway and found us. Okay, that's fine. Glad you're here. All right, Joan, back to you. Here's your first quote.
World clenches buttocks.
That was the headline on New York magazine this week, describing the global mood as what went on a roller coaster ride this week.
The stock market.
Exactly. The financial markets worldwide, in fact. On Monday, a national holiday here, the world financial markets went crazy. Traders in Seoul, South Korea, frustrated, their exchanges in a one-story building just kept jumping out the same window over and over again. In London, the FTSE index lost dozens of basis points based on concerns that it had a funny name. All of this, of course, was due to fears that the U.S. economy was about to completely collapse. And then on Tuesday, Ben Bernanke swooped in, cut rates before the stock market opened, it plummeted, and then on Wednesday the stock market came back. Nobody knows what's going to happen. Financial experts advise investors to hedge their bets, to maintain long-term investments in blue-chip equities, but also to fatten their household pets in case of food shortages.
That's great, because I put my ATM card in the machine this week and got a live chicken back out of the
slot. I know.
That's great.
It was a little can I
have change for a muskrat, please? Can I have two ferrets for a muskrat?
It was a little crazy when the market opened on Tuesday. People were like, it's over. It's over. Get your Apple carts ready, because it's like the depression is here, and then it didn't happen.
That would be the Apple iCarts.
Exactly. That's the difference.
But they're really small
exactly.
Apples.
The batteries don't last. All right, Joan, here is your next quote.
I know you think it's crazy, but I kind of like to see Barack and Hillary fight.
That was one of the weirder statements this week from a man who seemed not only to enjoy that fight, but to throw a bunch of low blows himself in it. Who is fanning the flames over on the Democratic side?
Bill Clinton.
Yes, indeed. So, as everybody's been saying for a while, with President Bush's approval ratings in the sewer and dissent in the GOP ranks, it's absolutely impossible for the Democrats to lose the 2008 election. Wait, This just in. Ladies and gentlemen, shocking news. Some kind of horrible creature has been trampling over the media, overshadowing his own wife, depressing and dividing his own party, voraciously eating cheeseburgers. We've got some jittery video footage of the creature taken by some hip New York partygoers. Oh, my God, it's the former president of the United States of America. To counteract him on this rampage through the Democratic campaign, the scrappy band of survivors in the Obama campaign have come up with a last-ditch, desperate plan. They've picked the most attractive women among them to put on a beret and go deliver a pizza to him.
Don't you think that maybe he's just happy that somebody else is fighting with Hillary? Takes the heat off, you know.
It has been a very weird week as President Clinton has completely thrown aside that whole sort of post-presidential demeanor and dignity and just gone after his wife's opponent with some avidity.
He seems like a high school student who graduated and then just goes back to hang out.
And everybody's like, dude, you're 28. You really should. Very good, John. Here's your last quote.
If I become iridescent from it, I become iridescent from it. I'll glow in the dark.
That was a New Yorker.
I'm guessing it's Upper East Side.
Yeah. I'm guessing it's 1686.
Carl actually went back to the Dutch period, yeah. Colonial New York, for that accent.
Peter Stuyvesant.
Exactly. Anyway, telling the New York Times, that New Yorker did, that she's not going to let news of unsafe levels of mercury stop her from eating what?
Oh, I have no idea.
Thermometers!
sushi?
Sushi, yes, very good.
Thermometers.
When they told us that spinach was infected with E. coli, we gave that up. That was hard. Coffee was bad for us. We went to decaf. But now they're telling us our tekamaki will kill us? Now they've gone too far. They cannot deny us our sushi, the one food that allows people to eat healthy and still feel like a snob. But the FDA this week announced that they had tested tuna samples from sushi restaurants and fish stores around New York. In every case, they contained so much mercury, you could take your temperature with them. People have become so desperate that in certain cases in New York City, particularly in the Village, they've started breaking the windows of sushi restaurants and just eating the plastic fake ones in the window. Sad. Carl, how did Joan do in our quiz?
Joan was perfect, Peter. She had 3 correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on her home answering machine.
Well done, Joan.
Yay. Thank you.
Congratulations. We want to remind everyone that they can join us just about every week here at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago. For tickets and more information, you can go to chicagopublicradio.org, or you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Okay, panelists, time for you to answer some questions about the week's news. But wait a minute. What's that sound? Could it be the thundering hoofbeats of 1,000 head of cattle? It is. It's Wait, Wait on the Trail.
Yee-hi, partner. I don't need no roof above me, but the starry skies.
Thank you, Cowboy Carl. All right, that whole thing was just an excuse, really, to have Carl bring you one more voice from the trail. Charlie, here's a Republican candidate connecting with young people at a Martin Luther King Day parade in Jacksonville, Florida.
Hey, buddy. How's it going? What's happening? You got some bling bling here? Who let the dogs out? Who?
Who, Charlie, was that?
He's fly. He's fresh. He's down with the youth. He can get and relate to the young people of America. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the former governor of the Commonwealth, Mitt Superfly Romney. And may I say, a hearty you're welcome from the citizens of the Commonwealth to the rest of America.
Mitt Romney, the former hedge fund manager, went urban in the streets of Jacksonville, varnishing his street cred. Perhaps coincidentally, perhaps not. The New York Times this week ran an article showing that, much as we suggested on this show a few weeks ago, the various other Republican candidates, despite their vastly different views on so many topics, are all united in one thing. They all hate Mitt Romney. Their perception of Romney, an ultra-wealthy son of privilege who's only won one election in his life previous to this run and is trying to buy his way into this one, was summed up by an advisor to John McCain, and this is a real quote. He said, "John McCain and his friends used to beat up Mitt Romney at recess." Unquote.
What time's recess?
Who let the dogs out?
NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Charlie Pierce, Paul Provenza, and Roxanne Roberts. And here again is your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you so much, Carl. Thank you, everybody. It's time once again for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, it's Jason Waldman from Rye, New York.
Hey, how are things in Rye?
Rye is good.
Is everybody Rye there in Rye?
It's a pretty Rye group.
More to the point, is the Playland closed?
No, it's still open.
Excellent.
Is it really?
What
is
the Rye Playland? It's one of the oldest amusement parks in America.
I had no idea.
They have about one roller coaster crash a year, but it's still open.
It's where they have,
that's the good one.
That movie where Tom Hanks grows up, he's a little kid and he grows up.
Yeah, yeah, big.
That machine is at Rye
Playland. Oh, is it really?
Yes.
Yeah, the Zoltar machine.
Yeah.
It really is there?
Yes.
Does it routinely turn
doesn't
children
work
into adults?
No, it doesn't actually, but it turns adults into children because Rye Playland is fun.
Oh.
Where adults can be a kid.
Aw.
What do you work for, the Chamber of Commerce?
I do. Thank you very much.
Well, Jason, welcome to our show. Now, you're going to play our game in which you must tell truth from fiction if you can. Carl, what is Jason's topic?
Oh, no. You can't scare me. I'm sticking to the union.
The Writers Guild is not the only group in the middle of a labor action. This week we read about another group of workers who got fed up with management and gave voice to their complaints. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories of workers in the world uniting. Choose the real story. You'll get Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to go?
I'm ready.
First up, let's hear from Charlie Pierce.
The masses rose up in Wisconsin Dells last week. Beaver Tail Bob's, a local chain of trapper-themed family restaurants, feature a roving band of musicians called Beaver Tail Bob and the Skillet Lickers, who roam the restaurants singing. The musicians in the various bands have been vainly trying to affiliate with the local musicians' union. Last Thursday, all at once, the several groups of Skillet Lickers spontaneously broke into a medley of Look for the Union Label, Woody Guthrie's Vigilante Man, and the Internationale. Stunned patrons looked up from their beaver tail pizzas in amazement, and management went back into negotiations with the musicians. That vigilante song was cool, said one young patron.
Beaver Tail Bob and the Skillet Lickers doing union songs in restaurants in the Wisconsin Dells. Your next story of workers uniting comes from Paul Provenza.
The Redlands County Circus of Redlands, Texas, has been suffering declining audiences and profits and had to let over a third of the performers go. To put pressure on management, the clown troupe, which lost three of its eight clowns, staged a protest during a performance. "We're normally happy clowns," said one of the troupe, "but we wanted people to see the pain and suffering the people who run this show have caused." They decided instead to frighten the children with, quote, "the harsh realities of corporate greed." Entering the ring with makeup more suited to Marilyn Manson, the clowns shambled to the children in the front row and begged for food. "We're starving," they said. "Feed us cotton candy or we will die."
Children were horrified as pratfalls were played for real, and one clown slipping on pie cream feigned paralysis, moaning, "I have no health insurance, I have no health insurance."
It was a clown strike, and the clowns threw down their tools in Redlands, Texas. Your last story of labor unrest comes from Roxanne Roberts.
Italian artist models are so unhappy with their working conditions, they're striking by putting their clothes on. Nude models say they want professional recognition and full-time contracts. Only 50 of about 300 models have employment agreements. "It's a tough, cold job," said 42-year-old Antonella Migliorini. "We are not porn stars." The tradition of models at art schools goes back for centuries, but it took a nude protest, ironically enough, in the 1970s to secure formal job contracts. Now workers want better workplace conditions. Quote, "Once a group of Japanese tourists turned up and started taking photographs," complained Migliorini. "I had to cover myself up quickly." An education ministry official has agreed to meet with the strikers. "We need to get to the bottom of this," he told the Times of London.
One of these groups of workers is protesting their working conditions. Is it musicians at Beavertail Bob's in the Wisconsin Dells of Wisconsin? That's from Charlie Pierce. From Paul Prevenza, clowns at the Redlands Circus in Redlands, Texas. Or from Roxanne Roberts, nude artist models in Italy. Which of these are the real unhappy workers trying to get better conditions?
You know what? I think the clowns are getting a bad rap these days.
Yes,
you know,
they are.
Kids are scared of them. I think it's the Italian models, though.
You think so? Why?
It just sounds so real.
It does.
Yeah, it does.
So, you're picking then Roxanne's story of the striking nude models in Italy. Well,
yep.
To bring you the real story, we spoke to someone who had an intimate understanding of the working conditions involved in the dispute.
I certainly sympathize because the work is not as easy as it looks. But on the other hand, I've never come across this particular problem. My models have always been well paid and seem to be totally comfortable doing the work.
That, ladies and gentlemen, was Leonard Nimoy, an actor and well-known photographer of nude models, explaining that he's never had an issue with models going on strike. Yes, you, in fact, picked the right story, Roxanne.
Wow.
Well done, Jason.
Thank you. Oh, I'm excited.
By the way, if you're saying to yourself, Leonard Nimoy, photographer of nude models, why, yes, you can go see his work currently on display at the R. Michelson Galleries in Northampton, Massachusetts. But Jason, back to you. You did it. You earned a point for Roxanne, and you have won our prize. Carl Castle will record the greeting on your home answering machine.
Oh, that's great. Thank
Isn't
you.
Isn't it fabulous?
Oh, yeah.
Thank you so much for playing.
Thanks, Peter.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And now the game where we ask serious people onto the show to answer questions about silly things. It's called Not My Job. Back in 1988 or so, I was living in Los Angeles, and a now-defunct radio station there proudly introduced a new musician they claimed to have discovered, a female singer-songwriter with a passionate and rough-edged voice, and, I realize now, a strange reluctance to be specific about the gender of the subjects of her love songs. Since then, Melissa Etheridge has become a multi-Grammy winner, a hero to cancer survivors, the center of some very odd tabloid stories, a political activist, and a winner of the Academy Award for her song, I Need to Wake Up, from Al Gore's documentary, An Inconvenient Truth. Melissa Etheridge, welcome to Wait, Wait.
Wow. I sound way more interesting than I am.
I was about to say, we had spent so much time in your resume, we're going to have to say goodbye.
I know. Thank you. Bye-bye.
No, I did want to ask you about that, because you are quite out now as a lesbian. You have been for years, but you weren't at the beginning of your career, and I wondered how much you worried about that.
Well, it was strange, because I was out to everyone who knew me and everyone, you know, in the business. I mean, I was playing lesbian bars when I was discovered, so it was like no secret, but it was this strange reluctance for anyone in the media to ask me about it. I was waiting and nobody asked.
I mean, they never asked?
No. I'm like, oh, someday somebody's going to ask and then I'll have to come out. And finally I was like, well, screw this, I'm going to come out.
So you didn't, I mean, maybe this is just an outdated view of what the entertainment media was like, but it wasn't like what you have to be careful, Melissa, because you can't say in your song that you're singing about your love affair with a woman, because that would alienate people. You have to make sure that no one can tell. I mean, that was never a concern.
Well, you know what I was doing? Even when I was playing in the lesbian bars and the women's music festivals and, you know, the full-on gay world, I would still write songs that were universal because I didn't want to just sing to lesbians. I didn't even want to just sing to women. I wanted women and men to be able to, you know, relate to what I was doing. And I think love is something that is genderless. So I chose to do that.
You know, I have to tell you, speaking just for myself, I've always really related and really enjoyed lesbian singer-songwriters because, frankly, because women done you wrong, too.
That's right. No, got yeah. Women, you can't live with them.
Yeah, I know, man. God, you and I should have a beer and talk about this sometime. I got to tell you.
Come on.
Did your coming out affect your career in any way? Because you had a lot of male fans, a lot of straight women fans. Who were just responding to the emotions and the power of your songs. Did that change? People say, "Well, wait a minute."
You know what? I always felt that if someone wasn't going to like my music because I was gay, then they weren't really listening to my music. And for people that, you know, ask me that, I usually tell them, well, before I came out, I was selling just under a million records, like 900,000 or something, each record. And after I came out, I sold 6 million. So I can't say that it hurt my career
at all. I guess not.
I'm sorry. Can I just interrupt for a second?
Yeah.
I'm gay!
Yeah. See, watch your career go. There it goes.
Now once...
It was a publicity move on my part.
Yeah, I know.
Okay?
There you go.
I admit it.
you just got to stare at the ceiling and think of the gold records. I understand.
No!
Lord.
Melissa, hi. I don't know. We met at Kathy and Jimmy's a couple of times.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yes.
And,
I know you. Paul,
and,
right?
Yeah. And Melissa would sometimes just get up and jam, as talented people do when they're getting together and having a nice time. And I just have to say, in the midst of all this, I it's very important to mention that Melissa Etheridge is just a great rock and roll blues singer, songwriter. Your music is fantastic. It's really a pleasure to talk to you again.
Aw. Thanks, Paul.
Another, of course, important association you have is with Al Gore, of course. You wrote the song, which won an Oscar for his documentary, An Inconvenient Truth. And not only that, and I think this is why they gave you the Oscar, you actually rhymed the phrase, An Inconvenient Truth.
Yes.
I think it's, you say, Our Cabin in Duluth. I don't remember exactly.
No, it was, forsooth, I went through everything, but ended up with youth, so it wasn't too hard.
Youth.
That
was hard to do, but I mean,
what was harder was when it's like, oh my gosh, I have to write a song about global warming. You know, I'm like, ah, give a hoot, don't pollute had been taken. You know?
Was it a strange context to be in at the Academy Awards for a rock and roller? Because I know that we already have the concept, we already have the facts of Academy Award winner Bruce Springsteen and Academy Award winner Bob Dylan. But how strange was it to be a rock and roller at the Oscars?
It's a little strange, and you know, when my song beat out the Three Dream Girls song, I mean, the whole gay community was like, "Oh, sorry, don't do that." Like, they wanted their showgirl thing, you know, the dream girls to win. And they're really pissing people off.
you have problems that a lot of rock and roll stars don't have.
Exactly.
Well, Melissa Etheridge, we are so delighted to have you. We have asked you here, in fact, to play a game that this week we're going to call...
You know, for the kids.
Last week, the world lost Richard Knurr, who died at the age of 82. Mr. Knurr founded the great American company Wham-O, which gave us the hula hoop, the frisbee, silly string, and many, many other things that make life worth living. We're going to ask you three questions about Mr. Knurr's life and times. If you get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answering machine, of course. Carl, who is musician Melissa Etheridge playing for?
Peter, she is playing for Lori Redingmeyer of Tallahassee, Florida.
All right, ready to play?
Oh, I think so. Wow.
Okay, here's your first question. Mr. Knurr and his business partner, one Arthur Spud Mellon, called their new company Wham-O because it reminded them of the sound made by their very first product, a slingshot. Growing up together in Southern California, it turns out Knurr and Mellon had been using slingshots to do what? A, to torment milkmen and other delivery people on their block. B, to pass notes to each other in class from different classrooms through open windows. Or C, to shoot meatballs to their pet falcons?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
These are our entrepreneurs, aren't they?
They are.
I'm going to say C.
You're going to say C, they shot meatballs to their pet falcons.
That's right.
You're right. The two young men, like boys everywhere, raised pet falcons. Yeah. They would shoot meatballs into the air with slingshots to teach the falcons to dive for prey. Very good, Melissa. Here's your second question. Waymo's most famous product was the hula hoop, which sold in the millions during one of the iconic crazes of the 1950s. There is a sad secret, though, behind the hula hoop story. What was it? A, the person who sold the concept to the company regretted it the rest of her life because she felt that it denigrated the real Hawaiian hula tradition. B, the company only made $10,000 off the product. Or C, Mr. Mellon, his partner, sprained his coccyx using the hoop and never sat comfortably again.
Oh, I'm going to go with A.
You're going to go with A, that the person who invented the hula hoop sold it, became upset because it denigrated the real tradition of Hawaiian hula, which, as we know, is an important tradition to the people of those islands. Mm. No, I tried, I successfully entrapped you, using your politically sensitive, you know, sympathies. The real answer is B, the company only made 10,000 bucks off the hula hoop. And this is why. They sold millions of them. People couldn't get enough of them. Everybody bought one. And then at like one moment, everybody stopped. Nobody in America wanted another hula hoop. They had millions of them left in their warehouses. They couldn't give them away. They lost almost everything. And they made ultimately just $10,000.
I had no idea.
But now you do.
Wow.
What did they do with the leftover hula hoops?
They perch falcons on them.
I was thinking they sold them all to the International Olympic Committee.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
All right, now this is exciting. I love it when this happens because this means you have one left to go, and if you get this one right, you win. You don't, you don't. Last question. Naturally, alongside his many successes, Mr. Ner had a few flops, including which of these? A, goop-de-goo, a liquid rubbery putty that slipped right through children's fingers and onto the floor. B, the wicked flick-it throwing knife set. Or C, the $119 do-it-yourself bomb shelter.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
Wow. I'm going to say A because I think I got it as a present once.
Goop-de-goo?
Yeah.
A liquid rubbery putty that slipped right through your hands and onto the floor?
Yeah.
You sure about that?
Oh, stop. Carl, help. Yeah, I'm going to stay with A.
You're going to stay with A?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm afraid it was the do-it-yourself bomb shelter. One of Wham-O's failures, offered during the bomb shelter craze, late 50s, early 60s. Apparently,
wow.
People didn't either need a $119 bomb shelter or particularly trust a $119 bomb shelter.
Yeah.
It didn't work out.
Wow.
Carl, how did Melissa do in our quiz?
Well, she needed at least two correct answers to win for Lori Brenningmeyer, but Melissa had just one correct answer.
Sorry, Lori.
Oh, that's too bad. Well, maybe you'll take some small comfort in your Oscar.
Maybe.
As you try to.
And my children.
And your children and your vast success.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you. Melissa Etheridge is an Oscar and Grammy-winning singer and songwriter. Her latest album in stores now is The Awakening. She'll be out on tour supporting that record this spring. Melissa Etheridge, thank you so much for being with us today. What
thank
a pleasure.
You.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And as a child, I danced like it was 1999. My dreams were wild. The promise of this new world would be mine. Now I am throwing off the carelessness of youth to listen to an inconvenient truth.
From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Roxanne Roberts, Charlie Pierce, and Paul Provenza. And here again is your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you so much. In just a minute, Carl will astound you with his impressions of people in this week's news. It's another round of Who's Carl This Time. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Roxanne, around here, we are still mourning the death last year of Sapir Murat Niyazov, also known as Turkmenbashi, leader of all the Turkmen. He, of course, was the official crazed personality cult leader of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. This week, his successor as president of Turkmenistan started work to undo Turkmenbashi's legacy. But what's interesting is, how did the new president of Turkmenistan become Turkmenbashi's successor in that office?
He won him in a lottery. He was not related to him, right?
No, it wasn't related to him.
His name sounded the same.
No? I'll give you one a hint.
They like the same dogs.
There's a certain symmetry because he gave Turkmenbashi a new crown and Turkmenbashi returned the favor.
And named him his successor?
Yes.
Yes. No? How did
Four
he
out of five politicians backed this guy in the general election.
He played one on TV.
No?
He played him on TV.
Wow.
I'm completely lost. You know this, right?
I do, but I'd love tracking
Turkmenbashi. Turkmenbashi knew this guy, trusted him intimately.
Right.
Named him his successor because he was Turkmenbashi's...
He was Turkmenbashi's double.
No. His Paul?
His dentist.
It was his dentist.
Which, as you know, in many countries is the line of succession.
Yes.
Royalty.
His dentist?
Yes.
What's that got to do with it? What kind of hint was that?
He gave
him crowns. Crowns.
Oh, crowns. That was a great hint.
Yes, thank you for
that
recognizing the genius
of that. What was the four out of five?
Four out of five dentists recommend Turkmenbashi.
That was a bad clue.
Oh, well, excuse me.
But the crown one was a great hint.
Here's the problem. I now have to say this man's name. Here we go.
Okay.
Mr. Kurbanguly Berdimukhamedov.
I believe it's doctor.
Once upon a time, just filled cavities and monitored the overbite of deranged Turkmenistan president for life Turkmenbashi. Until one day, we presume, when the good dentist was working on Turkmenbashi's teeth and the president mumbled to Mr. Berdimukhamedov's ears, trained in dental school, that sounded a lot like, "You should one day be in charge of this great nation." The dentist quit his job. He became the Minister of Health, rising quickly through the ranks to become president last year on Turkmenbashi's death. Recently, he ended Turkmenbashi's 7-year ban on opera and the circus. He opened up the country's borders, ended the celebration of Turkmenbashi's birthday as a national holiday,
and put a new ban on sweets.
Exactly right. He has instituted the death penalty for people who don't floss.
It's a wonderful ceremony when the visiting ambassadors come and present their credentials in front of the royal spit sink, though.
And they each get a new toothbrush at the end of the audience.
And a comic book that says brush.
Exactly. Charlie, a British man was able to end a kitchen fire when he adroitly used what to smother the flames?
The cook.
No?
No. He adroitly used himself. He sat on the pan.
Paul's like, you don't know this?
This is one I know.
Wait, I know this one.
Well, hold on. We got to give Charlie a chance.
All right, get going.
Hold on. Yes.
Here's a hint. Ready?
Yes.
Turns out Victoria's Secret, asbestos.
Oh, I did see he grabbed his wife's lingerie.
Close enough. Yeah. He actually used his aunt's extra large underpants.
Yes.
When the bread in John Marcy's frying pan went flambé, he did not panic. He just reached into a nearby pile of laundry, grabbed his aunt's powder blue underpants, size XXS, whatever, got them wet and threw them on the fire.
And then what? Immediately called the BBC so we'd all know about this story? Hey, I used my aunt's knickers to put out a fire. Bring a film crew.
You know, I often wonder about
that.
I often wonder about that, how these very odd incidents in various corners of the world end up in the news so we can find them and do them on the show.
It all goes in the report.
Yeah. Somebody's looking at the fire department reports because, in fact, we now know. It worked anyway. Despite the fact that the world now knows the size and color of her drawers, his aunt is grateful. She says, quote, "My family could have been in hospital, but the knickers saved the day." When asked about the efficacy of underpants in fighting fires generally, a fire department spokesman said, quote, "Clearly it depends on what size you are, but I don't want to go there." Kate Moss would be a dead woman. Coming up, it's lightning, fill in the blank, but first it's time for Carl to recreate some more voices from the week's news. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Wendy from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Hey, how are things in Albuquerque?
Outstanding.
Really?
Yeah.
What's the weather like there this time of year?
It's cold but sunny and just a little snow once in a while, enough to keep a pair of boots around, but really not bad.
Wendy, welcome to our show. You're going to play Who's Carl This Time. Carl Castle will read three quotes from this week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, Carl will record the greeting on your home answering machine.
Okay.
Ready to play?
I am.
Here's your first quote.
Just wake me up when it's over. Oh, it's over?
That was the blog Green Mountain Politics wondering what a certain candidate said as he dropped out of the presidential race this week. Who?
It had to be Fred Thompson.
It is. So does anybody remember this? It was just 6 months ago the GOP field quaked at the potential entry of Fred Thompson into the race. The former senator and popular actor, already a household name through his years in NBC's Law and Order. A true conservative who, like Ronald Reagan, really knew how to treat a cue card. Well, turned out he campaigned like a senior citizen drives. Slowly, wobbling from the right to the left to the center, and occasionally falling asleep. It didn't help that every time he held a campaign rally, the music would start to play and Thompson would run on stage and shout, "Hey, turn that racket down!" Your next quote, Wendy, is also from a candidate that we won't have to kick around anymore.
I'm running for president of the United States to enable the goddess of peace to encircle within her reach all the children of this country and all the children of the world.
That was how a certain Democrat announced his bid for the presidency back in 2004. That campaign didn't go very far. He tried again, didn't do any better this year. He withdrew from the Democratic presidential race this week. Who is it?
Dennis Kucinich,
yes. We dubbed him the official, hopeless presidential candidate of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Sadly, we were correct in this. We admire his constant fight against the odds, though last June, after he'd been campaigning for months, one poll found that only 6 in 10 of Democrats had any idea who he was. And of those who did know who he was, 71% said that there was no chance they would ever support him under any circumstances. This despite his call for universal health care, his promise to scrap the Pentagon and instead have a U.S. Department of Peace, or the fact that if elected, the country would have the most smokingly hot first lady since Angelina Van Buren. Farewell, Dennis. And we'll see you, and God willing, Elizabeth, in 2012.
Sure.
I think she's found
they
her soul.
They seem very happy together.
They honestly do. We actually talked
really
about this
do.
At some length on the show last week. That
a friend of mine told me that he moderated one of the local debates in before the New Hampshire primary.
Yeah.
And he told me that during the breaks, you know, when we'll be back in a half an hour with five more boring questions, Mrs. Kucinich and Dennis would go off to the side and like canoodle.
Yeah.
In the corner.
And
then they wouldn't canoodle. They would make out.
No, they would make out. It was New Hampshire. They canoodled.
The only politician who can legitimately say he wants to spend more time with his family.
I see your point. All right, very good. Here is your last quote.
Eli Manning, America's favorite little brother. And as little brothers tend to be, Eli will get annoying.
That's MSNBC writer Bob Cook. Not too happy that Eli Manning is about to join brother Peyton among the members of that family who will have done what?
Let's see. Been big shots in the Super Bowl.
Who played in the Super Bowl, exactly right. For 4 years now, Eli Manning has been the Manning that couldn't. He had to suffer in silence. His older brother Peyton won a Super Bowl and got ad deals from companies ranging from Sprint to the Dove Real Woman Real Curves campaign. What was Peyton Manning doing in that commercial? In fact, Eli played his worst game this season while Peyton watched from a luxury box, but no more. With his New York Giants overtime victory against the Green Bay Packers, little Eli is going to the Super Bowl at last while Peyton stays home and counts his money. However, unlike Peyton Manning, Eli is going to play against the undefeated juggernaut that is the New England Patriots. So Eli Manning right now is a lot like one of those ancient Aztec warriors who would be selected to be feted and praised and lavished with gifts right up to the moment he was sacrificed by having his heart ripped out. Carl, how did Wendy do on our quiz?
Very well, Peter. 3 correct answers. So, Wendy, you win our prize.
Great.
Well
done. Thank you very much.
Congratulations, Wendy. Thank you so much for playing.
Thanks for having me on.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer is worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Paul Provenza has the lead. Peter, he has 4 points. Charlie Pierce has 3. Roxanne Roberts, 1.
I know.
All right, Roxanne.
Yes, sir.
I don't know if I've ever had occasion to say this,
but
you are in third place.
I am in third place.
You are in third place. That means the clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank.
Yes.
New York's medical examiner says it may be 2 weeks before he knows what caused the death of blank.
Keith Ledger.
Exactly right. 8 years after losing the state to George W. Bush, blank won South Carolina's Republican primary.
McCain.
Right, John McCain. Convicted of being a terrorist conspirator, blank was sentenced to 17 years in prison.
Padilla.
Jose Padilla.
Padilla. Okay.
A burglar in Florida was quickly caught and arrested after trying to escape from a woman who was also blank.
Who was also trying to steal burglar the same place?
No, who was a marathon runner and a black belt in karate. No Country for Old Men and There Will Be Blood each received 8 blank nominations.
Oscar nominations.
Yes. In an upcoming book, Heisman Trophy winner blank reveals that he suffers from a multiple personality disorder.
O.J.
No, Herschel Walker. Fortunately, one of those personalities was fast. The British military's newly refurbished HMS Illustrious, a $640 million aircraft carrier, had returned to port on its first mission after its blank failed.
It's anchor.
No.
It's rudder.
No.
It's captain.
No.
It's Dennis.
No. Did you say it's dentist?
That's an important position in the British Navy.
No, it's refrigerator. The $640 million HMS Illustrious abruptly changed course this week while sailing towards the Indian Ocean after workers on board noticed that the ship's kitchen was turning into the HMS Odorous. Can't expect British sailors to go a week without their Sunny D or Eggo, so the ship turned around and sailed back to Britain in search of the Maytag repairman. Carl, how did Roxanne do in her quiz?
Roxanne had 4 correct answers for 8 more points. She now has 9 points, and Roxanne has the lead.
Okay. A more comfortable and familiar position for Roxanne than usual. All right, next up, I believe, Mr. Pierce. Here we go, fill in the blank. President Bush spoke to school children at a library in Washington, D.C. to mark blank day.
Martin Luther King.
Yes. Meg Whitman, the chief executive of online auction site Blank, announced that she would step down on March 31st.
eBay.
Right, after Hamas tore down a huge wall, thousands of Palestinians poured across the border between the Gaza Strip and Blank.
Egypt.
Right. Anheuser-Busch announced that it would be running 7 ads during this year's Blank.
Super Bowl.
Right. Not only did 2 Canadian robbers hold up a bank in the same building as a police station, their getaway was fouled up because the driver blanked.
Stole a police car.
No, drained the battery listening to the radio. Best known as Bob Newhart's wife on the old Bob Newhart show, blank died at age 70.
Suzanne Plachet.
Right. The 22nd James Bond movie and the 2nd starring Daniel Craig will be titled blank.
Holy God, not this again.
No, it's called Quantum of Solace.
Mine was better.
It was. Woman looking for love will be happy to hear that the man holding the title of blank is single again.
Mr. Lovetron.
No. Hairiest man alive. Good news, ladies. 29-year-old Yu Zhenzhuan is back in the market, listed in the Guinness Book of Records as the world's hairiest man. His body is 96.5% covered with thick, lustrous locks. He blew second-place finisher Robin Williams clear out of the water.
Yeah, but it's a good thing for him, Anna Asner retired.
I know. Yu is eager to begin dating again after breaking up with his girlfriend of 3 years, and he's registered with an online dating site. We're not going to tell you which one, so watch it. However, his listed hobbies, which include combing my back, may be a turnoff to some women.
Oh, God.
Carl, how did Charlie do in our quiz?
Well, Charlie had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 13 points, and Charlie has moved ahead and has the lead.
All right. Now, how many, then, does Paul Provenza need to win?
5 correct answers.
All right. Here we go, Paul. You ready?
I can't believe there's any more questions left.
Here we go. Fill in the blank. The 2 rival presidential candidates met for the first time since their disputed election caused tribal violence in blank.
Dentist.
No. Kenya.
Kenya.
For the first time in at least four decades, the median price of an American blank dropped last year.
Home.
Right. A highly partisan study found that President Bush and other administration officials made 935 false statements regarding the security threat posed by blank.
Iraq.
Right. According to two separate studies released this week, blank may raise the risk of miscarriage and lower the risk of ovarian cancer.
Coffee.
Right. To get rid of pests, a homeowner in Galveston, Texas, set off six bug foggers at once, accidentally blanking.
Fainting.
No, blowing the roof off of his house. Alan Melvin, the actor best known for his role as Sam the Butcher in the TV show Blank, died at age 84.
Green Acres.
The Brady Bunch.
Oh, right.
A survey of NASA astronauts found no evidence that crew members have been blank on launch day.
Drunk.
Right. An 81-year-old man in a Chilean village shocked his relatives when he blanked.
Gave birth.
No, sat up.
At his own wake.
Yeah. Right,
and asked for a drink of water, right?
He did, yes.
Yeah.
Relatives were sure that Filiberto Carrasco was dead. Poof, gone. So they called a mortician. They gathered at his wake to pay their last respects. And that's when things took an interesting turn. According to Carrasco's nephew, Pedro, quote, "I couldn't believe it. I shut my eyes, and when I opened them again, my uncle was looking at me." Carrasco told relatives that he wasn't in any pain. He asked for a glass of water and said that he couldn't wait to see Brett Favre in the Super Bowl one last time. Nobody has had the guts to tell him. Carl, did Paul do well enough to win?
He needed five correct answers to win, but Paul had just four correct answers. So with 13 points, Charlie Pierce is this week's champion.
There you are, Charlie. Upholding a recent New England tradition of victory. It's interesting.
That's true.
Now, panel, how will Ben Bernanke stimulate the economy and save our bacon? Charlie Pierce.
Soft lights, scented candles, hot oil, a Barry White CD, and then you leave everything to the invisible hand.
Roxanne Roberts.
Along with the tax refund check, the Fed chair will send two-for-one discount coupons to Dunkin' Donuts because America runs on Dunkin'.
Paul Prevenza.
Actually, they're going to set the GNP to music and make it available for Guitar Hero.
Well, if Ben Bernanke does any of those things, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Charlie Pierce, Roxanne Roberts, and Paul Prevenza. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal, and we will see you next week.
Rock, jazz, urban, classical, world, folk. Discover old and new favorites in a variety of genres at NPR's music website. That's at npr.org/music. Upon a broken guitar.